following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, hello, hey, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland from the home office in Memphis, Tennessee. Studio A is where we're at this time out. Boy, you know, you guys are lucky that you guys are, I don't know, lucky may not be the right word. I'm lucky that I'm able to sit down and do this. Past couple of days have been a bit rough. It of course is a Sunday is when we tape this. This is the what is today? It's the second day of June. This is episode 277. I got to tell you, we have had here at the house, we've had construction people. We've had a bunch of them. We went through the process. Those of you that are homeowners will probably be able to relate to this pretty well, but we had a new roof put on. We had some storm damage here and we had a leaky roof and we had to get it done. And I tell you what, on the surface of it, when you think about it, you go, you know, we just need a roof. It won't be that big a deal, blah, 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 blah. I've done this a couple of times now, and it's a pain in the ass. It really is a big pain in the ass. Thankfully, I had a really good contractor that helped me out with this. So, you know, thank you, Sean, for all of your work and his company that took care of us, because there's this whole thing about, you know, part of the process, of course, you're dealing with your insurance company, your homeowner's insurance company. And I tell you what, man, these people, they cash a check left and right, man. But boy, well, they won't write one. No, you gotta fight, man. You gotta fight so hard. And they treat you as though, you're going to bankrupt them if you file a claim. I was taken aback by some of the, you know, cause, you know, there's a lot of conversations. It goes back and forth, you know, between the homeowner, the contractor, and the insurance company. And the contractor does a good job. It's just this one, the one we had. He did. He took care of us by handling the negotiations, if you will. And that's what it is. It's a negotiation. You know, he comes out here, he gives out a list of what he needs to do the job. The insurance company, of course, sends their man on the street in, and his job is to tell you how much they're going to pay, and it's a long, long process, and it's ugly. So the first time out, they tell you don't take the first number, you never do, because it's never going to be enough, and so they have to do what they call a supplement, and they will tell you, yeah, there's going to be they expect the supplement to come, but boy, howdy, when that supplement does. You know, the secondary estimate that comes back in there and part of that negotiation, and the insurance company then gets taken aback by this. So instead of calling the contractor, they call the homeowner. They would call me, and my phone has been burning up the past couple of days. It has been insane. All last week, I think I was like averaging having to recharge my phone like once a day, cause it was just nuts. And it got to the point where I just didn't even answer it when the insurance company called, because I wasn't going to be the one to give them any numbers. That was not my job. I don't know anything about being a contractor. I don't know what it costs to do certain things. They give me an estimate. I look at it and I go, okay, that seems reasonable. I guess. I don't know. I'm not the one writing the check, you see. And during one of the conversations, the adjuster was so upset. And I guess this is standard procedure with all insurance companies, and your mileage may vary. Of course, I guess it depends on who you're with. But the company that that we have, they were a bit put out about it, and they got to the point where they had accused us of taking advantage of the good name of the company, and that we're just out seeking money. You're just looking to line your pockets. It's like, what a horrible thing to say to a customer. you're making these accusations. And I wound up talking to my local agent, insurance agent about it. And I told them what was going on. And they were, of course, very apologetic about it. And I don't know, we may have cost somebody their job over it, but that's just it. I mean, every time you have a service that you pay for, it just seems like you have to fight your way through it. It's insane. It doesn't stop. It's just this constant back and forth and back and forth about what it is that you're trying to get done, and they don't want to do this, and they're not only, and insurance companies are, you know, they're all kind of the same. I guess it's really just degrees of how bad they are. it's what it is. We were fortunate. We were able to get the job done, but by God, it wasn't without just a whole bunch of teeth pulling and beating people with baseball bats is what it seemed like. And it was just exhausting. Absolutely exhausting. And about halfway through the whole process, you know, you got a contractor who's worried about getting enough to take care of this, that, or the other. And this isn't going to happen. That's going to happen. And then the insurance company goes, well, we're probably just going to have to, we're going to, you know, they threaten you. We're going to have to send somebody back out to reinspect it. And we're like, yeah, do it so we can show you exactly what's going on. Yeah. And I'm standing behind the contractor going, yeah, what he said. Well, exactly what he's doing. I don't give a shit. I just want my house back. And that's what we've. Thankfully, we're about 99% done with the whole process. We got a couple of little small bits to take care of, and that'll all be taken care of soon. So, Lord have mercy. The joys of homeownership. And insurance companies, by God, they are just flat out the devil. They really are. They are the biggest industry in this country. They really are. And I'm not just talking about homeowners insurance. I'm talking about car insurance, medical insurance. God forbid you should get sick anymore because of all of that that goes into it. And, you know, it's, oh, my God, it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. And as I mentioned, it's incredibly exhausting. It's so tiring. I need a vacation after all of that. That was just insane. Absolutely insane. So, all right, that's done. That's behind us, I guess, for now. And we just, you know, we continue on. So, and we got a roof over the head. So there's nothing to, I guess, be too upset about at this point, because it is, like I said, it's finished. We, you know, at this point, we kind of count our blessings and continue on and do the best we can. Yeah, well, that's not what this show's about, though, even though I just rambled on about it for about 6 minutes. Today, this time out, what we're talking about? Riding one's coattails. Have we seen this happen before? You betcha. Does it happen in this business? All the stinking time. We'll tell you about it. It's up next right here from Radioland.
Get on the Memphis Brew Bus. Every Saturday at 2 p.m., we'll take a 3.5-hour adventure through the Memphis craft brewery scene. The Memphis Brew Bus stops at 3 local breweries for some special behind-the-scenes tours, talks with the master brewers, and, of course, tasting of their signature brews. While on the bus, you'll hear stories and learn about the history of beer. Plus, you'll get some music from the Radio Memphis Library. Go to memphisbrewbus.com and find them on Facebook. The Memphis Brew Bus. We'll drive you to drink.
I want to tell you guys a story, and I don't know if I've told it here or not, it's been a long, long time, clearly, because I don't remember talking about it that much, but there was a time many years ago where I was asked to be a judge at a talent competition. You know, already it just reeks of... you know, I have done the judging for like the International Blues Challenge that comes to Memphis. I've done that before. I've done a couple of those. Those are fun. It's a little more, you know, it's very subjective, but it's tolerable because you're dealing with original talent, and they're asking you to, you know, on paper you write down, you know, what you think about certain acts, and do you like the music, or do you like the song, do you like the presentation of it, is the performer, you know, are they good, do they know their instrument, you know, that kind of thing. That's one thing. But I'm talking about this very specific incident. It happened for 2 years. I was a judge for the Elvis Presley tribute competition. The Elvis Presley tribute artist competition. Living in Memphis, of course, Elvis is a thing, right? You know, you got Graceland here as a big tourist attraction. We've talked about that place before. But every year during the Death Week, which is in August, there's, of course, a big... Because he was born in January. There's an event there. And then there's one in August, which is the Death Week. They don't like to call it Death Week. It's the Tribute Week, I guess. I don't know, whatever. He died in August of 77, so there is that. So, at any rate, two times a year, you have a bunch of tourists that come to town, and they go pay their homage at Graceland, and they go to the gravesite, and they'd have the candlelight vigil, which is a thing in and of itself. And everything becomes all Elvis for a long time, for a week. And for a couple of years, I was asked to be a judge for the Elvis Presley tribute competition, the Elvis Presley impersonators. I said tribute because they don't like to use the word impersonator. I don't know why that is. I think because it cheapens the quote unquote act. I don't know, man. And so anyway, they asked me to do it. And in this particular thing, they would have, and it was a 2-day deal. So they had a round of individuals that were impersonating Elvis. And they would come up and they would sing, I guess it's like two or three songs. They were played to a recorder. It was like a karaoke thing. They had the costumes on and they come in and they do the show. And the next day they have some other artists, and then out of that, and they usually have some other judges, and they mix this all up. And then they would choose somebody to go into the finals, which was probably over at the Orpheum. I never got to judge the finals, thank God. But any rate, so they bring me in. And they said the format is going to be like this. Every person that comes up to perform, you do their thing, and you have a sheet of paper, and you go through the, you know, you rate them on performance, you rate them on style and on their costume and all of that stuff. Scale of like 1 to 5, that kind of thing. And whatever comments you might have. But what they did do, which I thought was pretty ballsy on the part of the organizers, is that they had all of us judges sitting at different tables, and it was at the Hard Rock Cafe back when it was down on the eastern end of Beale Street, and we had us kind of spread out across this rail. And we're at these little two top tables, and for us to do this, they would give us a bite to eat and a couple of beers, you know, to do whatever. It was fine. You know, Hard Rock was very cool about it, and they usually are pretty cool. You know, Hard Rock is a fun place, but. I'm sitting there, and they put a microphone in front of everybody, all the judges, and I said, well, why is this? They had an MC, and the MC would come up there, and they would introduce the act, and then that individual would perform, and at the end of it, they would ask the judges what you thought, and there you were talking to the whole room. Now, keep in mind that the audience is made up usually of a bunch of little old ladies that are just big Elvis fans, and they're all swooning. They're having a big time. They all love the Elvis. They just can't get enough of him. And these shows, I guess, are the closest they're ever going to see to reliving those moments of being around the king. So, anyway, they would come around and they would ask, and of course, all the judges are told they're told to be kind and gentle. Now. At the time, my friend Julian, who was running the Hard Rock at the time, he came to me and he pulls me aside and he goes, Rick, I want you to be like really hard on him. I want you to just mix it up. Be rough, man. Do what you do. Just be yourself. Don't sugarcoat nothing. So I did exactly that. At first, when they asked me to do this, I thought, boy, you guys have made the wrong decision here. I like Elvis as much as the next guy. I don't know. I've got some of his music here. It's not like I seek it out, but I do have my moments where I like to hear a little bit of it because it's some pretty phenomenal stuff. However, having said that, I have a problem with the impersonator thing. And it stems back from a conversation I once had with George Klein. George, of course, used to run with Elvis, and they were best friends all through high school and even after school. And, you know, George had spent a lot of time at Graceland, and he spent a lot of time with the whole Elvis group, the whole clan, if you will. And, not that clan, please. The idea here was that, you know, when you spend time with somebody like George, who recently passed away, by the way, I told him about this, and he just shook his head, and he said, you know, I get it. It's sanctioned by Graceland. It's part of the money-making thing. But he says to me, the real problem with the Elvis impersonators are the fact that none of them, not a single one of them look or sound like him. Like what the real deal was. They're just, it's a joke. It kind of cheapens the idea of who Elvis really was. And I'd always believed that myself because I have a problem with somebody who's trying to make a living off of doing what somebody else has kind of already done, but doing it as that person. You know what I mean? It just seems sort of stupid, you know? And I'm getting ahead of myself. Right. So anyway, this contest is going on and these guys are coming up on stage and I'm making snarky comments. And every time the MC would say, okay, Rick, what do you think? And everybody would just, I mean, you could hear a mouse fart in there because it had the attention of these people. And I got booed a little bit. I don't care. Whatever. And there was a guy, I remember this because out of all of the guys that were there, there were actually these two guys. One of the guys that came out there who looked nothing like Elvis and sang nothing like him, but had on the white jumpsuit. And dude, for whatever reason, decided to forego underpants. And he's, you know, Elvis was wearing a very, basically kind of a form fitting thing. And the guy was, like I said, he was looked nothing like Elvis. He was kind of a big dude. He wasn't like fat. He was just a big boned kind of guy. I hate that phrase, big boned, because it's not what it is. Anyway, he's a pretty beefy fellow. Any rate, he's standing there wearing this form fitting thing in his, it looks like he's got a damn cucumber in his pants, which may have been. And the whole front row was completely all worked up about all this. These little old ladies. I mean, I even made the joke, you know, clean up on aisle two. Somebody bring a mop because these ladies over here are just, they're all worked up about all of this. And by the time the guy finished his performance and I was asked about what I thought of it, I went to that bit. I just immediately said, dude, in the future, you might want to put on some drawers because it's completely distracting to all of these ladies. And I didn't give a shit what you sounded like. They're like, over there looking at, look, this guy's got his knob over here right there in the front row. And of course, it got some laughs and I got booed a little bit by it, but you know, whatever. As soon as that guy got off stage, there was another impersonator that was behind me, and I didn't know he was there. And he came up to me. He hadn't performed yet. He was getting ready to, but he was standing out in the crowd watching this happen. And he came up to me, and he taps me on the shoulder, and he goes, hey, man, you've been kind of hard on all of us, you know? We're out here trying to do our thing. And I looked at him and I said, well, first of all, you're not supposed to be talking to the judges because, you know, that's not going to do you any favors. Second of all, don't be complaining like that because, once again, see what happened before. It's not going to do you any favors. And I said, third, you got a lot of balls to tell me about you're just trying to do your thing when clearly this guy had spent some money on his look because he had plastic surgery done to look like Elvis. He had the makeup on him. He had the whole thing going. He was really trying to sell it. And I told him, I said, you're trying to make a living off of a dead guy. And that's what Graceland does, if you think about it. Disney's no different. They're making money off of Walt Disney's creations. What a cash cow, that thing. You know, Mickey wants a lot of money to go see him. Graceland is sort of the same thing. I get it. It's a museum. It celebrates the life of the guy who was known as the king of rock and roll. He didn't invent it, but he certainly owned it, and he did a hell of a job with it, and it's a fine, interesting point of the history of our culture here in this country is Elvis. You can't help but, you know, get around that. But it's Elvis Presley, okay? Not some guy, not some hump dressed like him or trying to sing like him or acting like him or anything like that. That's just, that to me just really, and George was right, it cheapens the whole stinking thing. And it's as if you have just allowed yourself to ride onto the coattails of somebody else's success. You know, when you talk about Elvis, you can't help but think about the fact that he was incredibly successful, of course. But you got to remember, it was a long road for him to get to that. You know, he was told no a bunch of times before somebody said, yeah, we'll take you on. It just didn't happen like that. You know. He was kicked out of a lot of places. He worked very, very hard to do the things that he did. He crafted his look, and a lot of it, of course, came naturally. But still, I mean, it was, what he did was unusual. It was, nobody had ever seen anything like this or ever heard anything like that. Now you got all these guys that are dressed up like him, and they're trying to do their thing. And they're trying to make, this is the, for a lot of these impersonators, this is their job. This is their sole income. They'll have these guys, they'll win the National Tribute Artist Competition, whatever the hell, and they get a bunch of money for that, and they get to go play shows in Vegas and in Los Angeles and stuff like that. And it's like, wow, I get it. There's a market for this sort of thing, probably dwindling some, as the fans die off, but still, dude, you're making your money off of a dead guy. And it's, I can be critical about it because I think it's kind of dumb. Kind of dumb. It's incredibly stupid is what it is, you know. And, of course, being asked to judge the thing really made, you know, that that was, are y'all really sure you want me to do that? After the second year, I was not asked to come back. I was asked not to come back, which was fine by me. I remember telling Julian, I said, I don't think they like me much anymore. And he says, well, you did what you were supposed to do. And of course, you know, and I think all the Elvi had gotten together and said, oh, we don't like that judge. that guy's a douchebag, man. He's over there talking about all this stuff and he's highly critical. That's, well, bitch, that's what I did. You know, when you are asked to judge something, you are asked to be critical of something. And that's what this is about. If you are asked for your opinion on something and you give that opinion and they don't like that opinion, then you can't change those rules. This is how next year fire the judge, which is what they did. And I'm, like I said, I'm perfectly fine with it. My wife thought it was fun because she got to sit there with me and watch the show. She had no influence on me as a judge whatsoever because I thought they were all bad. and here's what's really kind of sad about this. I mean, ultimately, on the surface of this, I said this to one of the guys. I said, you know, you've got a great voice. You don't sound anything like Elvis. I mean, kind of, maybe. But you sing really well. Why aren't you doing that? Why don't you write your own material? Why don't you put your own band together? Get on the road. You know, you could do some stuff. You could make some money. You could do it that way. And it's not, you know, John Smith, the Elvis impersonator. It's John Smith, the singer. Imagine that. I made that name up, by the way. John Smith. But, you know, I wasn't going to name it. I don't even know these guys' names. But there are these guys that, and they travel all over the country month after month after month going to these tribute competitions trying to out-Elvis each other. And it's just, it's sad because on the surface it seems like, okay, I see what they're doing. But you're riding the coattails of something that's already been done. And that's what I tell this to young artists all the time. I said, look, you know, if you really want to make it in show business, you've got to do one thing. You got to give me something that I've never heard nor seen before. That's it. And it gets tougher and tougher because more and more people are in the business. They're in the show business and they're copying stuff. I mean, hell, there hasn't been an original thought in radio business forever. You know what I mean? It's like that. So what we do is we take those elements of what we used to do, what used to work, and we twist them up, and we freshen them up, and we keep going. But we try and own them to a certain extent. We make them better. We make twists on this. I'm working on something right now that was, in essence, almost a straight rip off of what was done back in the 60s, 50s and 60s. But nobody's ever done it since correctly. So we're just like, hey, we're going to try it. And I can't get into all that, but that's just it. We're doing something different. By taking an older thing and making it new, refreshing it up, trying to do something different with it, and putting in an enormous amount of creativity behind that. But it's not very creative to go stand up there dressed as some dead guy and, you know, wear the same type of clothes, sing the same type of song. Look, Elvis didn't even write that music. He didn't write a single stinking song that I'm aware of. I'm sure the Elvis fans that are listening to this are going, oh, I'm going to get on my keyboard and I'm going to write horrible things about you because you suck. Radioland at PirateRadioStudios.com. That's just it. You can't be critical of the guy who's being critical of you if you are asking for that opinion, especially in show business, because that's what's going on. Now, an entertainer knows there's another little basic rule of thumb for anybody in the business, and that is, it's none of my business what other people think of me. That's correct to a certain point, but, you know, obviously, your well-being, your livelihood depends on whether or not somebody enjoys what you do. So there is that. But somebody who's overly critical or anything like that, it's like you never read the. If you're a performer, you never read the comments, especially YouTube comments. By God, some of these people can get so harsh. But they just don't. You just don't do that. I can't help but look at some of that stuff sometimes, and I laugh it off. I don't let it get to me, and you really shouldn't. And when you do get a nice compliment or something like that, I like to return it and say, hey, thank you for the nice words. It was nice of you to say these things. But that's just it. Those are few and far between. It's far easier for somebody to hide behind a keyboard and say something really nasty. Me, I'll say it to your face if you really want me to. I'm doing it right now. I'm sitting here. This takes on a complete different level of I don't know, chutzpah, I guess. You know, being able to stand here. I'm actually seated. But to be able to sit here with a mic on, you're hearing it come from my voice. I'm not sitting behind a keyboard writing some sarcastic rant in social media about it. I'm telling you, you're hearing it from me. It has a lot more of an impact that way. But yeah, you got to do your own thing. You know, you got to think long and hard about what it is that you're trying to accomplish, and then go out and give it the best that you can. You know, and when people say no, which they are inevitably going to do, you really believe in it, you keep going until you physically can't keep going anymore. And if you're lucky, you'll find some like-minded people that'll pick you up. Granted, going back to the Elvis thing, yeah, there's apparently a business, there's a market for this sort of thing, because there are fans, there are people that will pay money to attend a show to see a bunch of Elvis impersonators trying to out Elvis each other. Man, riding somebody's coattails like that, just, you know, you're never going to be remembered for that sort of thing. Think about it. You know, some of the greatest people that could have been in show business that were making their living by impersonating others, and you're sitting there thinking, my God, I remember that guy. He used to sing like, they don't put that. They're not going to put that on your tombstone. But if you've done something that moved somebody, whether you evoked a proper emotional response, whether it was a laugh, brought a tear to an eye because of the performance that was given, said something that was really moving, or sang a song that was just, you know, fantastic, that you wrote and performed perfectly, or as close to perfect as possible, that's what you get remembered for. You don't get remembered for writing those coattails. And I see this a lot. I get approached by people all the time that want to do something with me and with Radio Memphis. And you can tell right out of the bat, right out of the box, man, you know exactly what's going on with these, with some of these people, because they feel that they're not there to really work for you. They're there to use what you've already built to work for themselves. And that, my friends, is where it gets really, really difficult. It does, because there's just a bunch of these meatheads that hang around and go, I love this. You need me. Oh, my God. Diane and I have a laugh about that around the studio, because we've actually had that happen. We've had people that have come up to us and pull us aside and say, you know what you guys need? You guys need me. You guys need me to really. And I'm like, where the fuck have you been for the past 8 years? You know, where were you when times have been really thin and tough? And it's, you know, it's like it is right now. It's not easy. Not just going to come in here and, you know, ride the glory all the way into the sunset. It doesn't happen like that. Because we've seen that before. You know, when cameras start showing up and, you know, there's a video project underway. Oh, wow, howdy, man. All the volunteers you need are there. Oh, you're doing something special on the air. We're going to do that. I once hired an individual who came to us to work in our sales department. And this person, during the interview, I had to excuse myself intentionally. I left the room for a couple of minutes and came back, and this person was on the phone, which is fine, and was saying, oh, I'm only doing this until they realize just how good I am to be on the air. And that was it. I ended the interview, and it was over. It was done. You have ulterior motives. Sorry, you're not being honest when you're riding coattails. That's the you're not just going to sit there and hook up your wagon to someone else's horse because they're going somewhere. You know, get your own goddamn horse and go where you need to go. That's the important part. Do what you have to do it correctly. Be original. Be different. Be something other than Elvis Presley, for God's sake, man. It's not that hard, really. Find what turns your crank, you know, what flips that light switch on for you. That's what you have to find. If you're going to be in this business, you got to find that.
I want to do what you're doing.
Fine, do what I do, but do better than what I do. If you can, then do it. Nothing's stopping you. But don't be me. Don't be somebody else. Don't be Howard Stern. Don't be, you know, any other radio personality you can do. Don't be any of those people. Be you. It's part of what this business is all about is, you know, yeah, there's a bit of exaggeration. There's a bit of show business that goes into this because that's what it is. It's for entertainment. Usually over here on this show, I'm a lot more open and honest. I'm not hiding much, but there's not a persona, if you will, that's just sitting here. It's just me. You know, on the air is a completely different deal. If you listen to the Blues Show or you listen to the Morning Show, which I'll be back on this week, thankfully, because I don't have construction people all over the house. But still, that's a little bit different. But it is rooted somewhat in reality. So, you know, having said that, go, you do you, I'll do me, and we'll go to each other's shows. Sounds like a pretty fair deal, don't you think?
Wizards is Midtown's premier gift vape and alternative smoke and CBD emporium. Make Wizards your CBD headquarters. Great in-store deals on a huge variety of CBD products. CBD oils, lotions, soaps, and CBD dog treats. Too many to mention here. Plus, Wizards has jewelry and accessories, incense and candles, and a wide variety of outdoor stuff. Get in to see it all. 1999 Madison Avenue opens 7 days a week, 10 to 10, or online at wizardsmemphis.com. Wizards, because it's still smoking. Must be 18 or older to buy smoking-related material.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
Yeah, it's the state of radio. It's the state of podcasting. It's happening. We're, you know, there's a whole running thing about, you know, if you can think of it, there's a podcast about it. It's like, well, if you can think of it, there's a magazine for it. That's what we're living with because the magazine joke was the thing 30 years ago. But now it's so much different. But here's what's happening. We're starting to see fewer and fewer of these shows being created because they realize that they can't pull it off. The days of like three or four guys sitting around a bunch of microphones with a bunch of beer in their hand laughing at inside jokes and wondering why no one's listening, we're finally getting beyond that because now advertisers are starting to sniff out the idea that by you saying a podcast doesn't mean it's just a bunch of humps, a bunch of frat boys making jokes about something that nobody else understands. There's actually real meaningful content that is starting to become a thing. And that's what's really kind of special about it. And the same thing has happened to internet radio because a lot of stations that used to think, well, we could pull this off, well, they found out they couldn't.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
My thanks again to my friend Sean over at Gable Roofing. Those guys did a great job, and that was just a free plug, really. Having said that, it looks like these guys were really interested in doing some advertising with Radio Memphis too. So, you know, what happened to me, they can help you out too. I mean, like I said, yeah, it's a pain in the ass, but it could have been far worse. Oh, Lord have mercy if I didn't have these guys to help us out. But you may be hearing more about these guys as time goes on because they helped me. I'm sure they can help you out too. So there's, I just wanted to say thanks to them because this past week has been just bananas. It has been beyond crazy. And I'm one of these guys that when I get to my office, I'm like anybody else, my home office, like where I am right now, and I'm sitting here to work on stuff. It's hard to do that when there's a lot of things that are going on and you have to be on top of it. And it felt a lot easier realizing that I didn't have to be on top of every single stinking thing when something is happening to your home. And the moment they were basically finished and they all left, I stood in my driveway with a cocktail in my hand and I took a big deep breath and realized it's finally done. I got my house back. It feels good. I can do my thing. Nobody wants to have complete strangers in and around their stuff all the time. It does. It gets old. It's taxing. It's tiring. And now I feel better. You don't think about your roof when you're underneath it. You know, that's the whole thing. Looks good. They did a fine job. I'm happy. I'm headed off to the studio. I got a big show tonight. If you happen to catch this before 8 p.m. Central Time on this Sunday, June 2nd, we have the Bluff City Backsliders in the studio. If you like Hokum blues, Hokum jazz, and all sorts of fun songs, fun stories to go with these fun songs, you'll want to tune in tonight. Some of these songs are adult themed, which is even better. It's going to be a lot of fun. So I think it's like five guys in the studio. It'll be fun. So anyway, that's tonight at Radio Memphis. You can find us at radio-memphis.com, of course, and which is the home of this show. So there you go. All right, that's it. I'm done. I'm out of here. Y'all take care of yourselves. Take care of one another. And for God's sake, please stop shooting each other, okay? I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been from Radioland.
Pirate Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.